the Song Confessional Podcast. A teen mature beings. An adult language. Put your children to sleep.
Hey, this is Walker Lukens, and you are listening to the explain to you what we do here at the Song Confessional. So we travel around the country in our little blue camper trailer, and we record people telling us stories anonymously. And we call these confessions, right? So we give our favorite confessions to our favorite songwriters who write and record an original song based on your story. Each episode, you'll hear one of our favorite stories, the song it inspired, and an interview with the people who wrote the song. I'm sitting here with the man that I've non-sexually consciously coupled with. Tell him your name, hero.
My name's Zach.
What's your last name for all the cops listening?
Catanzaro, write it down.
It's really appropriate, actually, for our confession today.
It is. There's actually plenty of cops listening.
Oh, really?
Yeah. We got some fans.
What artist are we going to be hearing from today?
This week we've got Husky Loops, a trio based out of London, originally from Bologna.
Bologna, Italy, where bologna is from, as well as tons of other cured meats.
A lot better ones than bologna, too.
Totally agree with you. Zach, how did we find this band from London, England?
Jim actually turned us on to them. They opened up for Spoon in the UK. He became a big fan and made sure we got them in for the confessional.
These guys just released a record. It's called I Can't Even Speak English. It was mixed by Jim. It is truly fantastic. They are a band after my own heart. They mix tons of genres. Their album is all over the place. I love it. Check it out after you hear the song they wrote for us. What's it called?
Who Did You Call?
What is this confession about? What is the deal with?
Man, we've got a really, really heavy one, actually. It involves friendship, mental health issues, secrets, and eventually the inclusion of the authorities.
For those of you out there who feel triggered by discussions of violence towards animals or any kind of sociopathic behavior, I strongly recommend fast-forwarding about 9 minutes to the production notes and just skip the story altogether.
That said, it really doesn't end as bad as you might be thinking and is quite fascinating to see how Husky Loops interpreted it.
Without further ado, here is today's confession.
Confession!
Hey, how are you?
Hey, what's going on?
Not too much, just listening to some great stories today.
Yeah, I'm sure, man.
Yeah, it's been good. You guys have been powering them out here. It's been a good location.
That's awesome. I've actually been trying to write a song about this myself, so maybe you guys can help me out. I had a friend, he was my best friend, he was like my brother, kinda, for a very long time, like 10, 12 years. We live right by each other, we hang out, do everything together. And you know, one day in 2014, I was in college, and he came over to my grandma's house, and he kind of just like, you know, he had a bad background growing up, and I knew that he was a little off. You know, he wasn't a, I guess, normal person. He had something, you know, wrong with him, but you know, I didn't think anything of it. He was my best friend, and I didn't think it was like a bad thing. And he comes over to my house, and he sits me down, and he has like a real serious like look on his face. So I was like, what's going on? And he was basically like, what if I told you that I killed somebody? And I was just like kind of in shock, I guess, like, what the fuck? And he wasn't laughing, it was like dead serious. And I was like, I don't know, like, I don't know what I do. And he goes, well, you know, I was like, did you kill somebody? And he said no. So I was like, all right, what the fuck? And he just goes, you know, what if I told you I killed an animal? And I was like, what are you trying to get at? Like, what's going on? And he basically told me that he was, we had a friend that we would just, you know, sit on our porch and bullshit and drink and smoke and hang out. And she had some stray cats running around our house, and you know, they would come onto the porch sometimes. We'd hang with them and pet them and all of that, and they just chill there. We'd feed them, and he basically told me that day that he was catching them and torturing them and fucking killing them. And I was just like, what the fuck, dude? And he was like, yeah, his breakup with his girlfriend and cats reminded him of his girlfriend. And then he started talking about like demons and not being able to control himself and the dark side and all that stuff, which I think is, you know, I'm not religious really or anything, but I was just like, that's a little nuts, man. And, you know, I was like, what did you do? Like, what specifically did you do? Like, what, like, why did you do this? What did you do? And he wouldn't really give me any details. So I was just in shock. I was like, you know, I'm a very strong, passionate animal lover, and I didn't even know what to say. So we kind of just went on like a 2-hour walk and just talked about like how he feels like he's possessed by like a demon and you know, he couldn't help it, and he's just like, he would get stoned and or drunk or whatever, and just he would capture the cats and just do evil things to them, he said. And it was just, to me, I was like, what the fuck, like, how could this happen to somebody like I was so close with? How could I not know that this was going on? Like, I knew he was fucked up from his childhood, but I didn't know that he was capable of doing something like this. Like, he was always like a nice guy to people and stuff like that. So that whole 2-hour walk, I was just kind of in shock and didn't know what to do. We kind of ended that conversation. We were just sitting in his car chilling in the driveway, and he was like, I shouldn't have told you, because now you're not going to be my friend again. And I was just out of reactionary behavior, I was just like, nah, man, it's cool, like, I'm your best friend, like, I just want you to get better, and I love you, man, and I gave him a hug, and then he drove away, and essentially, that was the last time I ever saw him, because the next day, I went to the police, and I was like, this kid's fucking crazy, like, he's the type of person that'll shoot up a school, like, all these things that, like, from being friends with him for so long, like, that he did that I always thought of as, like, funny or stupid or whatever, started turning in my mind, like, wow, that was actually malicious, like, he actually really tried to kill those people when he leaned out of my car and threw a water bottle to an oncoming car in a small 2-lane high, like, road. So, like, everything started making sense, and I went there with a couple of my friends to the police station who knew him as well and who I told this story. And the cops, you know, basically were like, you know, we don't have evidence. There's really nothing we could do. We'll send somebody over there to evaluate him. And, you know, that was kind of the end of it. So the cop called me a couple days later and said, we sent somebody over there to evaluate him. He passed their test. You know, they gave him, like, whatever test they give to a psychopath or something. And he passed their test. But he told them that I was making these accusations because he had slept with my girlfriend, who was our friend at the time, who I was dating. So that kind of infuriated me. And his mom and his stepdad started calling me, like, why are you saying these things? Like, this is horrible. And I just basically told them everything that he had told me up until that point in confidence, because I didn't really give a shit anymore. I was like, you know, he touched his cousin when she was younger, or, you know, he was sexually molested by this kid when he was younger, and, you know, his dad asked him to beat your, you know, his dad, they were divorced, his dad, kind of a psycho as well, and, you know, when my former friend was, like, 5, his dad asked him to beat whoever the guy his mom was dating with a baseball bat. He said, beat him with a baseball bat. And I was just, you know, all these things again started making sense. And the police didn't do anything. They're like, we can't do anything. You know, we know that you're not lying, and he's crazy, he's got something wrong with him, but we can't do anything. So called the FBI and I was like, hey, I just want, you know, there's nothing you could do, but I want to put this person on your radar because he's the type of person that will shoot up a school like out of nowhere, like if it gets into his head. And yeah, basically that's where everything got left off. Never really saw him again. He's still friends with extended friends of mine, but yeah, that's kind of the end of the story, I guess. But it's just something that's been like a burden, I guess, on my shoulders.
Yeah, that's really heavy. That's very heavy.
I guess he was going to some church therapy or whatever. If that works, good. I've really, you know, at this point, I have no intention of ever connecting with him again. But you know, it's sad because I would have like taken a bullet for him. I loved him. He was my best friend. I know he would have done the same. And I wish I had him in my life. But you know, it's kind of like cutting out the bad, never let it back, is never a bad thing, I don't think.
It's intense. Very intense. Thank you so much for sharing that.
Yeah, thanks for hearing me out, man. That felt really good to get out.
That's great.
Production notes.
Yes, we are back. Hi, Jim Eno here with Walker. Walker, what are we listening to?
This is an Instagram video that I took after your session with Husky Loops upstairs at Public Hi-Fi, your
studio. Wow, mm-hmm. That sounds cool. I wish I was there.
You were there.
No.
So the caption of the video is, yes, we're drunk. Mm. You were there. It was the band and Mickey Rose and myself. Whoa. And some people. Yeah, oh, hi, there I am.
There he is.
Some people we couldn't identify.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, we were just jamming upstairs. Why were you drinking so much after the session?
I don't know.
Fair, me too.
Yeah.
What was the day like with them in the studio? Did they have a song prepared or how did it go down?
They had a bass and drum groove that they had been working on that they wanted to start with.
They wrote the song in the studio, right?
Yeah, wrote it in the studio. But one exciting thing is we did have a very special guest appearance on this track.
Oh, yeah?
It was not Elizabeth McQueen. We tried to get her multiple times.
She wouldn't come over?
No, she wouldn't. No.
What did her management say?
I don't know. No one picked up. Then we tried Art Levy, and then he couldn't do it either.
What?
Yeah, I know. So then you happen to walk in.
Oh?
Yeah, with breakfast tacos and coffee. And we're like, hey, Walker, do you know how to whisper? Do you remember what you said?
I don't.
No?
No, what did I say?
You said, yes.
What?
Yeah.
And so I'm on the track?
You're the whisper track, yeah.
I don't even remember that.
Pretty good, yeah.
Well, without further ado, here's Who Did You Call by Husky Loops.
Nah, normal. What you're doing is not normal. And I loved you, but who you being is not normal. You, eternal, I thought we would be eternal. But I'll abandon you, cause you made me read your journal. I could, I should, call the beats man, cause you no good. I could, I should, call the beats man, cause you no good. I could, I should, call the beats man, cause you no good. I could, I should, call the beats man, cause you no good. Cause you no good. Hey. could, I should. Cover beats, man, cause you no good. I could, I should. Cover beats, man, cause you no good. I could, I should. Cover beats, man, cause you no good. Who did you call?
Oh.
Damn.
It was me. That song, that beat, it is so awesome. It really drives the song. Zach, as a drummer, can you explain what is unique about it?
Yeah, so he's so in the pocket on his backbeat. That's snare drum. You hear it and it's like perfectly in time. But the kick is kind of rushed and swung. That gives it a little bit of like a funky anxiety.
Yeah, that is what it is. It is a funky anxiety.
It's a funky anxiety. I mean, the beat's so up front. It's the platform of the entire song. But yeah, funky anxiety. I think I just coined a new genre.
I love it. I think that's my genre. Maybe that's why I like the song so much.
And me.
That's our genre. This song was written and performed by Husky Loops. That's Daniel Forni, Pietro Gorone, and Tommaso Medice. It was produced, engineered, and mixed by Jim Eno, with assistant engineering by Grant Epley. I whispered. It was mastered by Chris Longwood.
Interview.
Can you introduce yourself and your band?
Yeah, my name is Daniel, and I play in Husky Loops.
Awesome. And what's the name of the song that you wrote?
It's called Who Did You Call?
And what was the confession about, in your own words? What was this confession about?
Well, it was a really strange one. It was like about this guy who used to be friends with this other guy, and then at some point in his life, he had to call the FBI on him because, yeah, his friend opened up himself, and he was just confessing him all this weird stuff that he was doing to cats. That's pretty much how I would describe the situation. What interests me about this story the most, like, obviously, I tried to write the song. First thing, I want to compliment myself because this idea is brilliant. This project is amazing. I would redo it like another 100 times. It's amazing.
Oh, thank you.
It's such a good idea. But, I mean, I was trying to write the song not really about what happened, but I was kind of trying to be inspired by... I was trying to find a key of my personality in there. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, like, I think if you listen to a song, to this song especially, like, you wouldn't really understand probably what the song is about, you know, because yeah. It's such a hard thing for me to understand. This is where I'm trying to get to, because I think being from Europe, like, we have a very different way of dealing with these kind of things. Like, I would never call the FBI on my friend.
Mm-hmm.
I was talking about it with Jim the other day.
Yeah, he mentioned this. He mentioned this to me.
Yeah, because it's like...
So what would you have done?
Well, you know, if a friend of mine opens up so much, first thing, I would kind of like be overwhelmed by the fact that I'm such a good person to him that I allow him and I have his trust, you know, so he can open up himself and tell me something that heavy. Because a lot of people wouldn't say that because they would be way too afraid of the consequences. But so I think that first action of him telling me something would make me kind of double think about what to do, you know. I wouldn't just straight away go to the FBI. And also, in Europe, you would just probably call a doctor. But then, obviously, I wasn't thinking about the entire health insurance thing that goes on in America. Like, in Europe, you would just, like, you know, you would realize this guy's got problems, which most likely are associated with his brain. And, yeah. You know, and just, like, call, you know, a psychiatric or someone, and just like probably find some free help and in a hospital and help him out, you know. So I found it a very American story, which is also why I wanted it, the song, to sound very American.
Yeah. So a couple questions to follow up with that. I mean, one, I love the tone of the guy singing in the song. Like, it's so. It's so simple, you know, and like you said, like it's impossible to capture everything about this confession. And so I like that you sort of just broke down his motivation really simply in the lyrics, you know, I thought it was an awesome way because
thank you.
Because there's so much going on in this story, you know. I think it's really interesting what you said about in Europe, you know, the reaction would be, well, let's call a doctor. And here in the States, I mean, I've talked about this confession with several people. They're not surprised that he called the FBI or the cops, right?
Mate, I was so surprised.
Yeah.
But fair enough. I mean, culture makes different people, you know, as in you're shaped by your culture and your law. We're just lucky to have, you know, the health system that we have, but there's also many different things that are fucked here that in America aren't. I mean, America's fucking huge. That's the thing I've realized when I got there that really also inspired me. Like when I moved to, I mean, Italy is bigger than the UK, but and there's more people than the UK. But obviously the market for music and art in the UK is 3 times the size for obvious reasons, right? So when I moved to London, I was like, oh my God, I'm in this huge place now and this is the actual world. And I'm living my life in the world, you know, and I'm, whoa, look, all these people and these different cultures and all these genres. And then when I moved to America, I was like, oh, fuck, wait a second, this is the world. Because it's like 10 times the size. You got fucking everything there, you know?
Yeah.
So obviously when you deal with so many humans, the amount of fuck ups is larger.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's just interesting to think, you know.
I used to teach English as a second language I lived in New York, and I had a couple, all my students were adults, right? And I had this one student, she was Italian, and like she said this thing, you know, it's so fucking true. It's like we have such a different, the way we talk about World War II, which is this huge event, you know, it's like Americans talk about World War II like we won that war, you know? Yeah.
And it's, I like mean, everyone in Europe. You did save our ass. So.
Yeah. Right. But it's like everyone in Europe talks about it like we lost, you know?
Yeah.
And it's such a good point. And I remember I was in Gorizia, I think is the name of the town in Italy.
Oh, wow. And what were you doing there?
I was actually on a tour, and after the tour was done, I had a former student who said, hey, if you are ever in Italy, come stay with me. I'll take like amazing care of you. And I was like, okay, this is the middle of nowhere, but why not? And I went there, and it was an amazing like 3 days. I mean, he drove me to Ljubljana, and he just drove me fucking everywhere. And he's like, I want to take you to my favorite restaurant. It's in the middle of nowhere, all this stuff. But
sick.
We were, yeah, it was amazing. It was incredible hospitality, like all over, but he took me through this park, and it was just broken monuments and a hole in the ground. And I was like, what is this park? And he's like, this is our memorial for World War II. Like they just didn't rebuild it.
Yeah, of course.
You know? Yeah. But I think it's interesting because it bonds Europeans together in a way that Americans don't understand. Like there's very much this like avoidance of violence, whereas I think that here,
yeah, I mean, I think you're right. This is interesting. I never thought about it that way.
Yeah, I never really did until my friend pointed it out to me. But it's like, man, it's really true. Like,
I mean, you know, in Italy, we were the buddies. So
yeah,
and the sense mainly so Bologna is called the Red. Because it's always been like left wing. Mm-hmm. We had a lot of what we call partigiani, which were like the people literally fighting in the hills against the fascists and the Nazis, because they wanted to. It was like, you know, the internal fight for freedom. So being the baddie and also having such a strong sense for like, you know, fighting the enemy over here, we are really, really, really sensitive to. Yeah, I mean, we see the second World War, like, you know, fuck, we it was fucking terrible, we fucked it, we've lost it, and we had to fight for our freedom, you know? So yeah. I guess it is a very different feeling from coming to fix a place from somewhere else, you know?
Well, and also, I mean, I think it's kind of at the core of, like, healthcare, too, because...
Yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, a lot of this good... European laws started after the war. Yeah.
Yeah.
To kind of like save things from being shit again.
Have you ever had a falling out with a childhood friend like this, where it's like you just never speak again?
Not really. But I mean, yeah. I'm a very calm person. I'm very chilled.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think I have ever fallen out so much with someone. Maybe that's why the lyrics were so simple, because I was kind of... I always write from a place of love.
Yeah.
And I was just trying to... I was really trying hard to find myself, you know, to feel myself in his trousers, you know what I'm saying? Like, to, like, really, like, understand where it was mm-hmm. coming from. And
yeah.
I just started talking about love again. I was, like... I was very concentrating on the fact that this guy really loved the friend, but he can't love him anymore. That's kind of the meaning of my song, you know?
Yeah, it's like to the confessor, you know, his friend, I think he found out that his love was conditional, you know?
Exactly,
like he didn't know it was, and then it turns out it was. Not that I disagree. Well, there is part of me that I would have put some distance between me and this person too, if I had had the same experience. But yeah, I mean, basically he was like, turns out I don't want to know you anymore, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I always find that very interesting. That's what you just said is basically what the song is about. Like, I don't want to know you anymore, or I can't love you anymore. It's basically a song about conditional loss. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely. Have you ever had someone close to you have like a mental breakdown?
More than once, actually. I've got some pretty frontline experience with that. One of them in particular, though, was pretty intense. I mean, involved a knife. I was concerned for someone's safety. I mean, it was one of the most intense 5 minutes of my life. But for some reason, I definitely agree with Daniel and was always trying to help them get to a hospital more than calling the police.
But this guy, our confessor, I mean, he was around someone who was violent.
Very, yeah. And the whole abuse towards animals thing, I mean, that definitely never came into play in my situations, which at my core would have probably changed everything that I felt about it, you know?
Yeah. Do you think what he did makes him a bad friend?
That is like the ultimate question. It's such a catch-22, because in some ways... it makes him a great friend. He was worried about his safety, his friend's safety, the safety of others around. He wanted to make sure that not only did he not harm anyone else, but that he didn't harm himself. So there's obviously a lot of love and caring in that kind of decision. He wouldn't have made that decision probably about just anybody.
I think you're right. I think your intuition about him is right.
Yeah.
And I also wonder whether... what he did was caring and loving, but the problem was that he went to the cops mm-hmm. instead of a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I mean, the intent was there.
Or instead of going to the family, or there were other avenues he could have taken before necessarily going to the FBI, I guess, is what we're saying. But at the same time, it's like doing nothing in that scenario isn't necessarily expressing love. That's really just enablement.
There is a certain way in which Daniel almost didn't write a song that really delved into the details of what the confessor was saying, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, his reaction was very genuine, and I think the song rules. But it is interesting because, you know, that confession, there's so much more that goes into that just about friendship
mm-hmm.
and just about mental illness. You know, I wonder sometimes, like, what would that have been like if the confessor actually wrote his song? Because if you remember in your conversation with him, I mean, that's the first thing he says is, like, mm-hmm. I've been trying to write a song about this.
Yeah, it was really interesting that he is also a songwriter, but it's probably such an intense experience for him that he seems like he's had trouble. Like you said, I tried to write a song about this. He didn't say that he wrote a song.
Yeah. You and I have talked about this before, but... how we both ignore certain red flags about people.
Mm-hmm. We're too nice.
Too nice. And I mean it in a more casual way. Mm-hmm. Like, we'll engage and talk to people who are clearly, let's say at minimum, just annoying, but maybe beyond that, do have some kind of thing going on.
You definitely have developed some weird friends on tour. Yeah. There's been some very interesting tour friends.
Did you have one in mind?
I do have one in mind. I think you know the one I'm
thinking of. Oh, I don't.
You don't?
Who are you thinking of?
The hooker you pawned off on me in Wichita.
The hooker you pawned off on me in Wichita? Sounds like a fucking Tom Waits B-side.
Yeah. That was an interesting post-show interaction for sure.
So I guess just to clarify, I am in the mode at the merch booth of just trying to get people to buy stuff. And this woman was wanted a shirt. And I said, well, I can't give you a shirt. She said, what if I smoke you out? And I was like, oh, my drummer smokes weed. Zach! Yeah. And then you being more observant and less trying to make $20 off this person realized that she was a hooker.
Well, I didn't realize. She said, I'm a hooker.
Oh, wow. Okay.
She told me her entire life story. And I was too nice to walk away.
Yeah. But yeah. Okay. So my point with all this is that I feel like I have engaged with people over the years and maybe gone a little further in that than some of my close friends because they have just developed those skills of, oh, I'm not going to waste my time on this person.
I think that the fact that we rely on friends so much to be family kind of makes us that way to an extent.
I think that's fair. It's definitely fair to us.
It's like we don't have boundaries because of that, because we're always accepting new familial applications.
Yeah, I like that. I think that's fair. Yeah, I definitely tend to judge later in my immediate. I was talking with some people a couple weeks ago, actually. It was a group of people I didn't know very well discussing first impressions. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I was struck by was that I have almost no first impression of people.
Interesting.
And I think part of that, or no strong first impression, and part of that is I think I'm generally an accept first, evaluate later.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I think that's the best way to be, but that tends to be why I find myself sometimes, as they say, suffering fools much longer than other people I'm around.
Song Confessional Podcast is brought to you by KUTX. It is produced by myself, Zach Catanzaro, Walker Lukens, Aaron Blackerby, Rylan Kettery, Jim Eno, and Mike Lee.
The theme song you heard at the top was written by me, Walker Lukens. It was performed by myself, Zach Catanzaro, James Wesley Essery. It was engineered and mixed by Grant Epley.
If you like this podcast, the best thing you can do for us is to tell a friend. But if you'd like to do more, please rate us and review us wherever you listen to podcasts.
You can stream Who Did You Call anywhere you listen to music. Also, I feel like we should clarify that Bologna isn't really from Bologna. Mortadella is from Bologna, and bologna is something that is in your lunch when you're a little American boy.
I think it's basically taking mozzarella and making American cheese.
That's very true. So sorry, Italy.
Sorry.
Please don't come after us.